it changed. So Playboy changed my life. The guy I was 10 years ago versus the guy of today. Wow. I used to struggle to make ends meet when I was teaching, and I went and left a teaching income to no income. That's pretty rough. And here's the best part of it, guys. This business transformed my life, my financial future, and it's a gift. It just happens to be a winning formula.
Welcome back to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. Today, we're discussing how to get a piece of the trillion-dollar logistics industry, why Supply Point loves veterans as franchise owners, how brokering pallets became a major profit center, and Supply Point's focus on developing national account programs for their franchisees. We hope you enjoyed the show, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays. All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions.
All right, man. So I was watching the launch call. We originally met you back in, that was 2019. And then we had Emilio, who we've had on our pod. You know Emilio, one of our top consultants, placed a client with you guys. Yeah, I think he started in 2021. Last we heard, he was doing really well.
He is doing awesome. We couldn't be more proud of that individual. He's up in New Jersey, Cal Patel. Cal came in during COVID. Man, the supply chain was just bonkers, right? And the guy came in, we did our first training virtual, and he took it in stride. And Cal has now kind of rose as one of the leaders of the Supply Point family now. So we could be more pleased with how he's doing. We appreciate you bringing him into the family. He's been a great asset for us.
Love hearing that.
We want the individuals considering a Supply Point business to talk to the other franchisees. We have a really great culture. We don't hide or shy away from them talking to anybody. It's all fair game. And they're straightforward with talking to these individual business owners. We don't want their money. We want their success. The franchisees that are here, they bought the minefield. They were there with me thick and thin through the very beginning. They saw all the warts, but with what we've done and how we've evolved, we feel like we're a well-oiled machine, but a lot of it goes to the franchisees that are here now, the ones that were at Supply Point of Conception. These guys have brought in a lot of great ideas, and you know, our job is to adapt, evolve, and take those in stride and listen to them. And we got rock stars coming, guys. We couldn't be more happy with the folks that we bring on here.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, we want to hear all about the evolution of the brand over the past 5 years, like you said. A lot has happened. A lot has changed. We've had supply chain being shut down, right? We always looked at this as a recession-resilient business. But we're happy to have you on. I mean, we have a lot of brands on in the health and wellness space, in home services, right? Some of the more popular, rapidly growing brands across the country. But we also want to make sure we have on the smaller concepts that just don't get as much attention because not a lot of people think about logistics when about franchising. Right. But again, the business model is clearly working. We now have validation with clients who we placed in the business. So let's get the brand out there. Let's talk about it. And I think we should probably start there. Right. Like explain like I'm five.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. You know, it's funny because I didn't know anything about logistics or pallets or boxes once upon a time either. I went to school, and most people don't realize this. I used to teach high school social studies. I coached sports. I did Model UN. I did all that for several years. During the Great Recession, guys, 08, 09, I started to feel the pinch, right? I was feeling like I could lose my job in the teaching world, which that's crazy if you think about it. But I wasn't very happy. I was 29 years old, and I was really trying to figure out what to do with my life at that point. Do I go to higher ed? I had a master's degree. Do I run with it? Do I go and take a sales job, which I had some offers to do? But I turned to my dad. He had a background in logistics at FedEx. He was ready to be his own boss, right? And when I had heard about and really poked and prodded about the lifestyle, the business he had created up in Cincinnati, and here I am down in Charlotte, 8 hours away, worried about a teaching job, I decided I wanted to take the bull by the horn and control my destiny. And I started asking him, hey, tell me more about logistics. What do we do? What we do, guys, get to it. And how I started my business when I was a 29-year-old kid. When the bell rang at 2:30, this is how it happened. I started going to industrial parks, the shipping and receiving doors, right? The folks, the companies that make the manufacturing distribution, the steel companies, chemical food. I started going out there and just talking to folks out on the docks. And I would say things like, can I speak to whoever handles your pallet program? I'd love to try to help you guys out. And they would say, that's, hey, I'm Justin. I'd love to hear more about your services. This is what we buy. See if you can give me a better deal, man. And I'd go out to the market space. And next thing I know, I brokered a deal and it was residual income. And I'm like, wow, this deal is not going to just last 1 month or 2 months. It's ongoing. Now they said, all right, pallet guy, can you do shipping crates? Can you do lumber? Can you do boxes? I started to create residual income through multiple streams of different products and services. So that's why we kind of called ourselves Supply Put, because we create those multiple streams of residual income in those industrial companies, which is a $1 trillion and fast-paced growing industry. So that's kind of how the business got started, but that's what we're doing, guys. We're going into industrial America. We're putting those pallet programs together, those box programs together, spray programs together. It's an industry that's crushing it. And we teach our business owners how to adapt to that, how to thrive, and how to start their own business and grow.
That's great. And that's another question people ask. You know, I'm a teacher. Do you have people that are self-employed from teaching or from the law enforcement, a first responder? Yes. Yes. And you're one of them. I mean, people come to us from all walks of life.
You have heard from so many exciting franchise brands in a podcast, and you may be sitting there thinking about which ones could be the best fit for you. If this is the case, give us a call. We provide a free consulting service to prospective small business owners like yourself, and we will help you take a disciplined approach to determining which brands could be the best fit for you. Call or text us at 561-277-3710 or visit www.franosity.com. That's www.franosity.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
You said something and just kind of said it and glazed over it. Justin, this is the first time we have ever had a $1 trillion industry on the podcast.
Yeah, think about that.
Trillion. This is a massive, the pallet industry alone. Now, I know you're going to talk about pallets, and I want to get a little more granular. You said something to me like 2018, maybe even earlier. You had given me an example of someone that you closed. Maybe it was you or someone within your brand. And you said, Cliff, the guy just became, you know, just got in our system. He landed his first deal and it was 5,000 pallets a month. I don't know what that means. And you made a comment about keeping a dollar spread, like just a dollar. And I'm going, that's $5,000 a month that this guy closed.
You're right, Cliff. We're not only in a $1 trillion industry, this is the lifeblood of the worldwide economy, right? It was here well before us, gentlemen. We're on this earth. It's going to be here well after us. It's been through wars, pandemics, supply chain stuff. But we can teach a franchisee or a business owner how to get up and running and get up and running really, really fast, right? That's what we do. We pride ourselves on that. We want empire builders. But yes, Cliff, you can make some serious cha-ching in this industry. When you start to look at some of the item 19s, the financials that our franchisees are starting to put out there, the numbers are getting kind of fun and sort of ridiculous. Top line is obviously 7 figures. It can be double digit. It can be 8 figures, but you can take home 7 figures. That's the beauty of it. You have the potential and supply point, and I'm going to get into this in just a second, to build an empire. You're not buying yourself a job. We don't teach them to be entrepreneurs. We teach them to be empire builders, money to be made.
Adam, are you saying you have a franchisee doing 7 figures in gross profit currently? Or are you saying the potential's there?
We have somebody knocking on the door as of last year, and I think this year they will go over that. And that gentleman just renewed his second contract with us. He's in his year six, going into year six. So yes, Justin, to answer your question, it has 7-figure potential. We have 2 locations getting ready to knock on those
doors. Wow.
That's incredible.
That is incredible. Working from home. This is work from home, right?
We made the joke, we're allergic to overhead. So no storefront, no machinery, no inventory. We're going out there and we're building relationships. And you were talking about no sales experience. I'm a former school teacher. We understand that people buy from people they like and trust, but it doesn't hurt to have some sales experience. So what we do is we train them. We use Sandler sales training. They go through a rigorous course. It's sticky. It's ongoing. We meet regularly. And these guys are picking up the fundamentals. They're in the weight room. They're getting in shape. And then they get stronger and stronger with their sales training. So we provide that for them. That is free. That is part of the program. We make sure that they go through that before we even launch them. We're going to teach them how to sell supply point stuff. We bring in the right people if they're bankable and they're trustworthy and they want to be able to build rapport. But sometimes you need those fundamentals. But I didn't have any of that. The guy I'm talking about that's knocking on 7 figures or it doesn't have sales experience in his DNA either. What are we talking about? What their goals are? Are they interested in achieving their goals, or are they committed to achieving their goals? I can't coach and train anybody who's only just interested in their goals. If they are committed to achieving their goals, I don't have to do anything other than just help lead them. Are they self-motivated? Sky's the limit here, guys. There's no cap.
I love it. At any moment in time, like right now, today, there are 2 billion pallets.
1.8 billion in the U.S. alone.
I was shocked. So then I had to figure out, wait a minute, I see people like burning these things, and I see broken pallets on the curb all the time. They're making 450 to 500 million new pallets in this country every year out of wood. 93% of them are wood. I'm like, holy shit. Like, Adam, is this the focus? Is pallets the lowest hanging fruit? And then you get into the last mile and the LTL and all that other type of shipping. Like, wait, break us down. If you were only allowed to have 3 services, what are those 3 revenue streams? What's number one? Pallets?
Pallets. Wow. It's the door opener. It's the fastest growing industry that I can think of in our space. A lot of these pallet shops are geographically constrained, right? You can't take pallets in Charlotte and be successful shipping them down to Florida. Freight will eat you alive. The cost will kill you. So you got to work in your marketplace, maybe 2, 3, 4+ hour radius. Otherwise, you're just not competitive anymore. A lot of these pallet shops, a lot of people don't grow up saying, I want to own my own pallet shop. So labor intensive, you talk about overhead. These folks that make pallets, God love them. They're the hardest working people I've ever met in my life. If it wasn't for the pallet folks during COVID, everybody who was buying stuff off of Amazon wasn't getting it, because every consumable good clip sits on a pallet. Where we come in is we help these pallet shops. Right? Sometimes people wonder, why would a pallet shop want to work with an individual business owner at supply point? I'll just go around you and go to the client. Distributors, brokers, whatever you want to call supply point, make up such a large percentage of their total income, total revenue, that they couldn't live without us. And a lot of them are family owned and operated. They don't have or can afford to have the overhead of having a salesperson. It's lean and mean. What are we doing? We're going out there and we're connecting with Industrial America. We're talking to those decision makers on the docks. They want to do business with Adam. Why? Because I'm bringing them donuts. We're going out for lunch. We're building rapport. That's my buddy, right? Also, the pallet program's not working so well. We're going to fine-tune that, guys. We're going to get somebody else in here because that didn't work out so well. They're working with Adam. And by the way, Adam's now doing it. I like how I did third person here, by the way. Doing the pallets, shipping crates, the lumber, the corrugated boxes, the freight. We're sticky, and they like that. They want a one-stop solution for their decision-making that they can trust. Think about it like this, guys. These purchasing agents, these plant managers, if their production line shuts down, show's over. What's the cost of the production line shuts down because they got to save a quarter on a pallet, right? If I'm answering the phone, if I'm responsive, if I'm communicative, I have sure put a quality product in there and they like me, they're not firing the pallet guy, they're firing Adam. I know the value, and that's what we teach our franchisees. Don't worry about what we sell. Worry about how we sell. Worry about who we're talking to. Make sure we go back to being likable and trustworthy. Build those rapports, because there's no substitute for that. So it's not about necessarily having the best pallet. I don't have always the cheapest pallet in the room. I can get lean and mean, but I can build value with those other intangibles. And that's what we teach here.
Can we walk through a typical day in the life scenario? So I'm a franchisee, I buy the franchise. Do you do multi-territory deals?
Yeah. Great question. So first and foremost, when a business owner franchisee comes through our process, we talked about being an empire builder. I want them to realize that in 5 to 10 years, we talk about what is your why? Where do you want to be in 10 years? Let's start with the end in mind, right? If you don't know where you're going or what you're doing, you buy yourself a job, right? And now all of a sudden you're a one-man band, you're working your butt off and you're living and dying with your efforts. But you know what? You're always capped. I always say, get to a point where the more you work, the less you make. The less you work, the more you make. So we talk about being a wealth builder. We talk about being a multi-unit owner and putting people underneath you to scale out. The day in the life is this. You are connecting with Industrial America, those decision makers. You're bringing products and services to their door. You're putting programs in place to build efficiencies, to streamline your supply chain, cut costs. You're working with the vendor network. We help provide that, by the way. You use our systems. You use our technologies. You use our coaching and support and the know-how. We have your back. We help you. We show you how to be successful.
All right. So this is pretty hardcore B2B sales. So the franchisee needs to be comfortable getting out there, cold calling or door knocking to whoever's manufacturing a product. It could be food, right? Manufacturing, distribution, at any of those types of, like, every product is manufactured at some point. You're calling on these people and say, hey, I'm going to facilitate transport, waste removal, warehousing, packaging materials, and starting with pallets, and this is kind of the low-hanging fruit.
You know, I kind of glossed over Cliff's question. I apologize, Cliff, but pallets are the door opener. It gets you, and they want to talk to you about it. They're expensive. They're bulky. They are problematic. They're difficult. Nails can be a problem. If the pallet fails, guess what? There was product on that pallet. It broke during transit. That decision maker who brought in that pallet company is now in trouble. So they want to talk to a business professional, someone who has their back, who understands their deadlines or our deadlines, somebody who understands the production line can't shut down. It is the door opener, Justin. People want to move the pallet program as quick as possible to a person that won't let them down.
So that's where I want to go. So now what do I want? Now you're in. I gave you my pallet business. What do you want next? Where's that next profit center?
You listen to the customer.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, we do boxes. Okay, we can do stretch fill. We can do anything that's industrial packaging. We'll do it. We can do freight. We do domestic or we do international. That product at some point doesn't just sit on a pallet. It has to get boxed up. It has to get wrapped up. Then it gets loaded into a truck and goes from Charlotte to Tampa or Charlotte to Shanghai. We do it all. We listen to the customer. But we do a lot in pallets. We do a lot in those corrugated boxes. We do a lot in freight. And we treat every customer the way we want to be treated. And we treat it as if it was, we call it the golden package rule. We treat each individual company so special. We never know who has the golden package. So we might as well treat them all great because we never know which one can pop. And here's the other cool thing. You can have companies that maybe don't use a lot of pallets, but it got you in. I have a customer here in Charlotte where they weren't using a ton of pallets and or boxes. They just don't have a ton to do with when it comes to packaging. But they needed help with international shipping. They're a multi-million dollar customer now because we got in, we took care of them, and we ended up growing and evolving. And why do they want to work with Supply Point? Because of our core values, because we're not trying to make a sale. We don't have commission breath. We're putting systems in place to help our clients, and we're building those relationships. So you can grow with them, but you do listen to the customer, Cliff. We can do it all. Whether they're small, medium, large, doesn't matter if they're the household name brands, the big boys in the country, we do those guys. Nobody's too big or small for Supply.
So is it then a self-employment model, Adam, or am I having to hire employees then to facilitate ongoing operations of the business?
I don't like the idea of buying yourself a job, right? If you build this thing, we talked about being in the 1% and taking home seven figures, right? You can do it. But if you were to go sell your business, what is somebody buying? Or, you know, if that person that sells the business steps out, guess who's now in the trenches buying themselves a very high-paying job? We teach our folks that, hey, I know you're making a lot of money, you want to pocket it. Reinvest in your business, right? Put more people and systems in place. Buy back your time. Great book by Dan Martell, Buy Back Your Time. Put smart people in place to do these things that you don't have time to or maybe you're not as good at. Put salespeople in place. If you don't have an admin, guess what? You are the admin. Put the right folks and build a team, and that team will blow you away. That's how you 10X, right? You duplicate yourself on steroids.
So what is the labor model? Talk to us about what are you typically seeing in the labor model? Are you seeing people come in and create that infrastructure? Is that the reality of what you're seeing?
Who we're bringing in today, we talk about several things. First of all, they've got to mesh with our core values. They've got to mesh with our culture. I talk about what their why is. Where do they want to be in 5 to 10 years? And I say, well, if you want to get there, are you comfortable bringing in that support staff, those people, that personnel? So for example, we brought in, I think, 6 individuals in the last 4 months, and they all have, they either just started, they're in onboarding and training or just launching. And guess what? They all are looking or already putting people in place underneath them. We always say, start with the admin, then look with that ops manager next. We have programs in place to not just train the franchisee, but to train their admin, to train their operations manager. We can build a system for them to have turnkey on day one so they can run their empire, because I want to do that. And I want them to see that too. That's their dream. That's my dream. So everybody should win in that.
Adam, your investment range is $160,000 to $200,000, which seems like a lot for a business where you're working from home, you and maybe one employee. I don't think there's a lot of equipment or even vehicles. What are you starting with, and where's all this money going?
Right. Well, there's the original franchisee, 49.5. Other than that, Justin, to your point, we don't have a ton of overhead, but here's what we've learned. Just from a trial and error experience, we take the whole year worth of marketing. We bring coaches in place, sales training. We talked about EOS. We've talked about business coaches, all those systems in place. We do a national sales rally behind them. We do national marketing. All that comes in as something called a ready to launch package. So we take that money up front and we reinvest it. We account for every penny of that so they can see, hey, we don't want to negotiate 2-3 years and try to get people to say, I don't want to spend money anymore on my marketing, right? Get it all up front so we can help launch success right off the rip. So a lot of that, Justin, is packed into that ready to launch that these business owners want us. They've actually grown to, they want that. They love hearing that, that we know how to spend their money properly. So most of it goes to their marketing, just to be completely transparent with you.
And where marketing is what? Because it's B2B. Are you still doing digital? And
during COVID and supply chain disruption, everybody went to Google. You know, pallets were hard to find. Gosh, the price went up 400%. So everybody went to Google and we played in the game. What happened was is Google got more expensive and we weren't getting the leads. So what we do now, and what really is amazing, is B2B email lead gen. So email marketing, it is just top drawer. We've got state-of-the-art emails. We've got the emails that feel like it's a very casual, hey, it's just Adam checking in. We do that. We target all the decision makers in their territory by buying an intelligent list of all of the purchasing agents, plant managers, and so on. So we have those relationships, telemarketing as well. And we do that on, we do a little bit of SEO. We do that on the national level, of course, too. And you've got to always stay open-minded and evolve. But right now, guys, the email marketing is just top drawer.
And you're doing all this for them, for the franchisee?
Absolutely. All on day one. And it works. And it here's the thing.
Wow.
We don't wait around for business to come to us. We go get it. We attack. We let Industrial America know who the new kids on the block are. We are the ones that are on the scene that are going to take care of you. And the customers love it. We're bringing in the very, very, very best. We don't want just anybody. We want the very, very best. And that's what these decision makers need and want.
Is your competition really FedEx, UPS, DHL? Or is it someone similar to you? Who is your competitor?
In the franchising space, gentlemen, I have yet to find anyone that does what we do. Not anyone. There's no pallet franchise. There's no box franchise. We've seen people come and go and dabble in the freight world. There's a couple folks in there that I've been impressed with that do it, but they don't do everything. Again, that's why we're Supply Point. We're a one-stop shop for Industrial America. We work with everybody in the pallet kingdom, everybody in the box kingdom, in the freight world. We're free agents, though. We go into the marketplace. When you get something to quote, guys, it's gold, right? It's the most amazing thing ever. You get something to quote. Let's go to our marketplace. Let's find the very best deal for us, but also for our client that we can put a professional spin on and make sure that these customers love working with us. I got the best vendor behind me. So there's nobody doing what we do. Obviously, there's pallet competition, box competition, there's freight competition, but we also act as their best friends. If they're smart enough to sign up with us, then they know we just became their golden goose. The amount of revenue we bring these pallet companies is silly. So when somebody says, why wouldn't I just want to go around the supply point and go direct to the customer, customer's probably going to say no thanks anyway, but they just cooked the golden goose because we didn't just bring one client. We just brought 30 or 40 clients. What does that do to that vendor's top line? And we're their eyes and ears and we're their consultants and we have their back. So working with us has more than one value. It's countless values. If you want to hook up a free sales representation, work with one of us.
And you have no inventory of pallets. You have no inventory. You're not inventorying a warehouse
right.
of pallets.
We do not take ownership of it. We don't drive them. We don't get trucks. None of that at all. We do it from home. And what's nice, I've got little kids, and I can put deals together while I'm on the phone driving to take my daughter to school or pick her up, coach her soccer. I'm on the way to the beach, and I can do all those deals from my phone and my email. I'm not physically doing anything. No disrespect to people who are, but that's kind of the role we play, right?
Hey, it's quality of life. That's what people are looking for. People want their life back. People want to be more in control of their time. They're tired of the cubicle. They're tired of the corner office, commuting on a train. I mean, people don't realize how you have to give human beings a lot of credit. We do acclimate to the shittiest circumstances. I grew up in Long Island. I used to watch these guys 4:30 in the morning on a train platform in February, December.
Standing on the flap on the platform, freezing their asses off.
They're standing on a platform at 4:30 in the morning, freezing their ass off, waiting for a train that has a history of not showing up on time, right? I mean, what a life. Honestly, what a life. I give them credit, but they also have no clue how they have single-handedly destroyed the quality of their life. They have no idea what they've done to their life. And I refuse to do it. I refuse.
Group of folks, guys. And, you know, go back to COVID for a second. You think about the shortages that we all experience. You think about the fact that, oh, just going to the store and getting milk, eggs, or rice, or whatever you were trying to stock up on, toilet paper, if you could find it. Who was bringing that to these grocery stores? The truck drivers who were getting sick. And, you know, not everybody just got sick. Some of them didn't make it. So we had a couple of drivers that I knew had passed away during COVID, right? Then you got people cutting pallets. Think about what's going on in a pallet shop, a sawmill, right? Unfortunately, you're dealing with very scary industrial machinery, saws. People can get hurt. I'll leave it at that. And it does happen. So I'm just trying to avoid all the crazy drivers in Charlotte. That's my biggest fear in the day, not having to work any machinery.
Right.
So God love those people. They're been invaluable.
I agree.
So I could totally see all these people out there who have managed warehouses, right? Saying, man, this could be a good business for me, but probably not necessarily, because you're not looking for an operations or a warehouse manager. You're looking for a salesperson, because there's really not a lot of, I mean, there's customer service, but there's really not a lot to manage. Right? Like who are the franchisees that are buying this business? What are you saying?
You know who's actually coming in here hot and heavy, and we could be more proud to have them, is former military veterans.
Yeah,
love vets.
These guys, I've got special ops, I've got Marines, and God love them. Thank them for their service. We are so proud to have these guys and gals. Actually, we just put a lovely lady in Fort Myers this week, and I'm so proud to have her, Air Force. We want to lead these people. We want to help them achieve their dreams and goals out of the military. And those people are looking for to be put on a new mission, which is to achieve their goals. And that's my job, is to lead them to victory. And so, again, I put my heart and soul and my pride into making sure that I put systems and programs and support in place so we get them from A to B. So those folks, first and foremost, I love them. Then the people that are hungry, right? It's not, hey, business ownership is not for everybody. That doesn't make anybody a bad person if they don't want to do it. It's scary. When I started at 29, you don't think I was scared? I was, you know, what was I scared of? Everything and nothing. I believed in myself. I had all the confidence in the world that I would go out and get it done. But I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know what was about to happen. And everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth, per Mike Tyson says. But hey, back to that, to the military guys and gals for sure. And the people that are hungry, the people that trust themselves, that want to go out and achieve. We talked about being commit to their goals. Those folks, people who want to know what their why is, and we help them achieve that. If we can coach them, if they'll follow systems, supply point works, guys. It's been proven time and time again. Will they work? Will they follow a system and get it? That's why you buy a franchise, right? If you try to start your own business, you're going to hit every bump in the road. You know, my guy in Nashville, he's special ops. He says to the new guys and gals that are considering buying in, he says, we've already walked the minefield. You just need to follow the path. We don't want your money. We want your success. Follow the system. Follow our way. And, you know, I said this kind of in jest. Jesus wasn't a prophet in his own land. They don't want to listen to me anymore. I'm old news. What do the franchisees say? What are
totally.
The folks that are actually doing this?
That's right.
I will say, I do have my own location in Charlotte. I haven't given up the corporate location yet. So I know what they're going through. I see the day-to-day in that. And that, I think, when you realize we're running not only Supply Point Franchising, which is a beast, we have another company called Supply Point Logistics designed to bring in national accounts. We kind of, I forgot to bring that up.
Do you have it? Do you have the footprint, Adam? How many franchisees do we have now?
I would say with everything concluded, we have 16 individual owners and a lot of them are multi-unit. So we have a foot, we're getting ready to put two out west here in the probably at the end of the summer, but we've got more coming. We're responsible with our growth. I'm very careful who I bring in. I do not want to set anybody up for failure. We go through a very rigorous vetting process. We will say no. We will say no. I know everybody says that. I will say no. that we want them financially qualified. I really drive in about our culture, core values. I drive in about where they want to be in 10 years. And I listen to the franchisees. They have to go through a lot of validation calls, and they will get back to me. They'll call me and say, don't bring that guy.
Right. The franchisees will let you know if they think that they can make it in the business.
They're very protective of the brand. They're very protective. Here's the cool thing. These franchisees, these business owners, you're going to love this. So we have a gentleman, his last name is Masters. So his name's Paul Masters out of Georgia. Love this guy. He's a business coach for us. But we kind of coined the phrase, the mastermind group. I know, pretty funny. And once a month, these guys, all the franchisees come in and they go. And it's not, you know, you'd worry about that being a bitch session. It's nothing like that. It's what's working, what's not working. How can we synergize? Did you know I have a company here in Indianapolis that's also doing the same thing? They're located in Nashville. We should tag team that deal. Now all of a sudden, these franchisees, instead of not wanting to talk to each other, they are synergizing on their own individual deals where they can bring down two or three locations and they work internally. So that's happening. But to your point, Justin, that's why we have another company called Supply Point Logistics. You know, there are really not a lot of pallet companies that can go in and do anything on a national level. They are a broker. There's no competition for that either. Industrial America would love to have some competition in there. And that's what we're doing. So we can bring in, you know, some of these companies might have 7 locations or 30. Can do it, handle it. We're already making that happen. We're not scared of it, right? We can do that with pallets, boxes. We can do freight. Sky's the limit. And I feel like we haven't gotten started. It's just because it's a $1 trillion+ industry. I don't think I'll ever scratch the surface because it's always growing and I'm never going to catch up. But there's just so much opportunity and potential.
That's interesting. National accounts are huge. I mean, you've said a lot that would resonate with a lot of folks. For the first responders listening, I don't know if they truly understand how much they're loved by franchisors, simply because they're, one, insanely loyal, two, their ability to execute off of a model, off of a plan. And a lot of franchisors love them. It's also nice to have a national account program or just a synergistic relationship with neighboring or existing franchisees, which you don't see. Justin and I say this all the time. Like, why would you get involved in franchising if you're not going to leverage the collective intelligence of a group? Why would you not reach out to the most successful operator and ask for the answers to the test? It doesn't always come from corporate. A lot of times it comes from the franchisees in the field. Let's talk a little bit about the investment. We could kind of move along how we're making money. I have a couple of questions more granular on, you know, profit center, but total investment. And what are you getting? Are you basing this on business population, per capita? How do you define a territory?
A great question. So first of all, we looked at what worked in Cincinnati and Charlotte, the two motherships. Those were the two founding locations. And we said, okay, what does their customer base look like? Even their misses? Who are we calling on? And how many do you need to create a nice book of business? So when we don't care about population. Honestly, I would never put somebody in New York City. Who's buying pallets in New York City in Manhattan, right? So gotta be very careful with that. That's why we've said no to New York City. We will say no. What we are looking at is a industrial footprint. Can't put anybody in the desert either, right? So we are doing a full court of data analysis, second to none. We use the best of the best providers that help generate that software so we can know business counts, right? Most of it is manufacturing and distribution, but that doesn't mean everything falls in those SIC codes. A lot of our customers, in fact, like 68, I think last I checked was around over almost 70% of our customer base fall outside of manufacturing and distribution, right? But they're very similar spaces. So we pull all those SIC codes that our customers are made up of, and then we will roll that out. And we try to keep our franchisees, give me a roughly about an hour radius of their backyard, right? You don't have to live in Charlotte and go cover Richmond, Virginia, or go all the way down to Jacksonville, Florida to make a living. I can drop my daughter off at school, as I said, go see 3 or 4 customers 30 minutes away, come back, take her out for lunch, and get right back at it. Drop some emails, make some phone calls, right? That is the beauty of our territories. And that is protected when it comes to industrial packaging. We talked about that being geographically located, restricted, guys. So we don't want any franchisee going into somebody else's backyard. That's not cool. That's not fair. You gotta feel like you got something. The franchisees came to me about
3.5 years ago, and they said, how do you feel about no territory? I said, keep talking. And the more I heard them talk, I said, absolutely. You know, it's such an animal that there was no point, right? These guys can go live in Columbus, Ohio. Maybe the decision maker is in Milwaukee, and he got the deal done because he's in Columbus, but they have 17 locations and they want to take them down, and they don't want to work with 17 franchisees, and I don't want to take that from them, right? So we don't roll that way where we take people's, you know, profits and everything. We want, those are grandfathered in, but logistics. So aren't you going to take somebody else's account and jeopardize their revenue stream? There's too much business out there to worry about it. So that's the rule. No territory with freight and logistics because the franchisees asked. And we.
Wow. So right now you're an open territory model?
For freight and logistics.
For freight, right. But break down this like ideal. So guy, I get the pallet. The pallet's about, you know, you're getting it for X, you're leasing it, renting it, selling it for Y, you're keeping a spread. I get that part. But what about the actual shipping, a container? Are you just calling a multitude of, let's say, shipping or freight companies and then just adding a fee on there? And that's your profit center?
The training like this. So when you're doing a pallet deal, right? Maybe the pallet shop's an hour and a half away. They're more than happy to deliver those pallets or those boxes. Let's say it's a box vendor. They're willing to deliver that on their trucks. That's fine. And if there's a good rapport, trust there, that's okay. Or maybe they don't have the ability to go that far, but you still got the deal and they don't want to tie their driver up. That's where you broker freight. We have that internally. So they can tap into our freight provider because we've merged and brought on partners that are now internal inside. Well, we train them. Our people are going to know how to sell freight on day one. They can work with our systems. They can go outside of that. I'm always a big believer in go follow the dollar, find the money. We have vendors, approved vendors, and we have partners, and we can do freight in-house. But if you find a deal outside of it, we're okay with that. We still manage their books. We still can do the transaction to where we have visibility and help them. But if it's, again, do what's best for the customer, right? So if you need, and you know, some of these things like going international, it's an animal. Customs, tariffs, right? All the compliance that happens down at the border, at the ports, it's an animal. They could never do that on their own. So that's why they work with our partner that we merged with to do the international.
All right. And you're just adding a fee, like a handling fee, a broker fee, some type of fee, which is your profit center. Or no, I'm being paid by the companies I work with as a referral fee.
We're not really contracted out by any of these vendors to be almost like that almost sounds like a salary position or a paid position. It is, to your original comment, it's a markup, right?
It's a markup.
If a customer says, I mean, they're going to be, what the hell? Because our vendors now get business they never would have ever dreamt about getting, because us, we get preferred pricing. So if they were to try to, if the customer was going direct to that vendor, their price is here. But if they work through us, now it's 10% less.
Got it. Yeah.
Your purchasing power, as you should. The customer wouldn't be upset because she's still passing on a better deal than they were getting. When you do a deal, when you meet a new client, who were they? So, everyone is using someone right now, right? So everyone had, there's nothing right proprietary about this. Everyone has a relationship. Who are you usually going up? Are they literally using the big names that we're aware of? Or no, it's the A. Dewey Piles, it's the Freight Lights, those guys, Yellow.
Or are they using no one and just buying from the pallet company?
So think of it like this. The pie is so big that everybody eats, right? Everybody eats. The big boys eat the most, right? So I would look at it like this. If everybody's eating, how much do you want to eat? And the more you eat is by going out there, building relationships with those clients and taking it back to the marketplace and finding the best deals. And the more of that you do, the better your bottom line is going to be. Here's what we said. I give them 3 KPIs. That's it. Of course, I'm looking at their P&Ls, but I say, go make appointments. Go find the opportunities and write proposals. If you can do those 3 things and you are seeing growth, you're on the right path. Your P&L is going to reflect accordingly. If you're doing those 3 things and your P&L is flat, that's where we come in as a franchisor. We're providing services like business coaching, sales coaching. Hey, man, what's going on? You seem like you're hustling. You're putting a lot of appointments on there. I see all your quoting opportunities. You're falling flat somewhere. You're not waiting for proposals. That's why, because we're seeing that in your P&L, and we're not we're seeing something on your KPIs, there's no growth. Is it the training? Maybe. Is it a work ethic thing? Is it a communication thing? Whatever it is we need as the supply point franchisor, we got to help these guys or gals. We got to dig in there, find what that is and fix it. And that's where we come in as a system, is to have their back.
Adam, what's proprietary? Do you have proprietary software? Is there something that you've written some code? What belongs to Supply Point?
Let's put it this way. Supply Point University, it is the secret sauce, right? Nobody.
Right. It's decades of experience.
The old man and myself, he probably just, he's so mad. I just called
him. Is he still involved? Is Matt still involved?
Very much involved. Okay. Very much involved. You know, guys, wow. I get to work with my dad. You know, that is super cool. I'm born and raised in Cincinnati. Hooday, go Bengals. And it was hard to leave Cincinnati and move to Charlotte. That sucked. I wasn't really looking to move. I couldn't find a teaching job. So next thing I know, I leave my friends, I leave my family and everything I love, I was comfortable with. And now I got to start, I'm taking my wife with me and we're starting a new chapter. We're scared, right? We don't know anybody. And now all of a sudden I'm leaving teaching and I'm starting a business down here. Because I started a business and because he had my back, talked me from 8 hours away, even though I'm 8 hours away, I get to talk to him every single day. And we get to strategize and plan and we have wins together, we have downs together. And you know what? We've gotten so much closer. He's grown as an individual. I have about so much better. I'm so thankful for franchising. The guy I was 10 years ago versus the guy of today, wow, learned so much. And here's the best part of it, guys. Supply Point changed my life. It really did. I used to struggle to make ends meet when I was teaching. And I went and left a teaching income to no income. That's pretty rough. This business transformed my life, my financial future, and it's a gift. It just happens to be a winning formula. When we decided to franchise, I take that seriously. That's a big responsibility. Everybody talks about responsible franchising. I hear it. I truly mean it. When we bring in an individual, I really want to see them realize their goals and dreams. And the way we do that, I can teach them all the secret sauce. I can teach them how to sell pallets. Anybody can go out and do this, right? But we have a culture. It's treat people the way you want to be treated. It's the golden rule. Everybody's got core values, but we go with the golden rule. And that's the father and son family stamp that I grew up with. That's what I put in my family. It's so easy and basic. Everybody talks about it. Nobody does it. I make our team members do it. I make our corporate staff leaders. If they're up doing it, I'm on them. That's not how we treat people. It's not the golden rule. I'll light somebody up because that's how we roll. And that's the beauty of working with your dad.
Well, I'm happy to hear it's going well and you guys are enjoying being a franchisor. I know that you didn't start the company with franchising in mind. It almost sounded like last time we spoke to you, your dad was kind of like, I could have retired, you know, like it's like I was kind of getting ready to like hang it up and we decided to franchise. And then it's like, all right, well, this is going to be a heavy lift. Let's see how this goes. But you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
And you're enjoying working together.
Yeah. Franchising was his idea, actually.
Okay.
I gotta give him credit. He started his own business at the ripe age of 46, right? He left corporate America. He had a background in transportation packaging, hence the supply point concept. He had it in his lifeblood. But at 46, guys, I was just about to go to college, and I'm not going to sit there and say I had a full ride. I didn't have the best of grades. I did okay, but I wasn't taking it easy on the college tuition. He helped out with it. And I got two younger sisters that were up and coming next. So he took a leap of faith himself, right? And he was taking that book of business as he hit his 50s, going into retirement. All his buddies were retiring. Golf course sounded great. And then here comes me saying, hey, man, talk to me. What did you just create in Cincinnati? I got to do this down in Charlotte. When we realized that we had two models or two locations that were duplicated, I'm a guy with no sales experience. I'm a young, dumb kid at 29, and I'm making it. That's where we went, aha. And we were trying to figure, honestly, we didn't know much about franchising. We were trying to figure it out. But that's what you do. You immerse yourself in something. You talk to people that are smarter than you. You ask. And then somebody said, franchising. And we went, let's go figure out what that looks and feels like. And, you know, that was in 2016. We didn't start selling until 2018 because I didn't want to start until I knew what I was doing. And then we started franchising in 2018. And we were doing pretty well. And then COVID hit. And I took off. I put the brakes on Free and Dev. I wanted to figure out what went wrong, what's working right, let's put new infrastructure in place. We brought in so much help and we have such a great team now. We have a leadership team that's second to none. My goodness, we have so much help. We have a great FranDev process, onboarding, support, training, ops, all. And that to me was more important than going and getting 200 franchisees overnight. It was about being able to handle that. Otherwise, you're a house of cards. So that's my dad's brainchild, to be honest with you. Now I'm hyper and I can't help myself. I just go, go, go. And I've taken and ran with it. And he's holding up though. He loves it. And it's because we get to hang out together.
It's awesome. The actual item 19, what does the current item 19 say specifically?
I wish I had it in front of me so I didn't miss anything. But what we're doing is if people need P&Ls, right? You need P&Ls. So we don't hide it. Here's our P&L. The current owners know that their P&Ls are going out there and they're going to be asked during those validation calls. So we don't hide it. We highlight things, of course, right? Top line, COGS, take home, profit margins, average ticket item, how much you're doing in sales with a client versus how much you're taking home. So those things, those KPIs we had talked about, some of those things are in there with that P&L. And then we open ourselves up to say, call anybody and everybody. We want to make sure that you don't feel like you are having anything hidden from you. So it's an open book.
It's great.
In short, it's what I would want to see.
You actually published the franchisees' P&Ls in the item 19 so that you could distribute them.
Yeah, it's in the FDD, and that's anybody can look.
Very cool.
That's interesting. Yeah, and it says a lot that your franchise system is actually providing you with P&Ls.
Oh, well, let's talk about that ready to launch. One thing I don't mess with are the books. We have that perfect books. I heard that before. I've learned that from other franchisors. We talk about problems in the industry. I don't know how my franchisee is doing. I don't know what's going on, right? Part of the ready to launch and part of my requirement, it's a compliance thing, and it's number one, is we will designate who your bookkeeper is. They take on all the franchisees. They work with you, you work with them, and you routinely make sure your P&L is up to date. So we have clean financials every month. They love it, by the way. And the reason why they love it, it's not that we're trying to be big brother or anything, even though we need to know it. We want them to know they didn't have to have perfect books because they're building an asset, right? If you're going to do this for 5 to 10 years and you get to a really pretty number at the end of the day, what is somebody buying? What's the first thing you're going to look? The P&L.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
P&Ls.
So that's why they want to do that. And if they're bought in, they should be.
Are you doing a flat royalty or no, a percentage of gross?
We don't charge any royalties the first 6 months. There's minimum royalties, you know, people have them, but in the first 6 months, guys, I think it's about strong starts, helping somebody who took a leap of faith. Like I said, I don't want their money. I want their success. I'm not looking to just suck all their money out on day one. They win, we win. So yes, it's a very modest 4.5% on top line, which comes out to roughly 25 to 30% of their gross profits, but it's about 4.5% on their top line revenue. I think it's one of the lower royalties out there in the industry.
Yeah, for sure. And it's an honor system. There's no POS system. There's no polling, correct?
Well, I absolutely know every single detail. You'd have to go rogue to hide it.
You'd have to go rogue to hide it. Okay, because everything's going through, let's say, a software system where they're, right, got it. Okay, so you could quantify what they owe.
100%. We know what you're going. And, you know, we also have systems in place so they can do ranking how they're doing on one client, the growth. So we've used third parties before that we bring those P&L analysis for them so they can see the health and how they're doing versus the rest of the system. So it's all out there.
Yes.
We don't hide it.
Yeah, it's a nice culture you're building. I like it. And you're building it sustainably, slowly, right, one right person at a time. I got to tell you, this is definitely back on my radar.
I agree.
This is a very interesting.
We got to grow this thing. This is the kind of brand, like as you said, there's no one else, as far as I'm aware, that's doing this in franchising. You have an opportunity here to grow the national footprint.
Yep.
Be the first to market.
Yep.
Put up a barrier to entry.
Yep.
And event, right, we were with a brand that had preferred vendor programs. It was at the time trying to get on preferred vendor programs. Cliff ended up making that happen. And the franchisees are asking for it, right? They wanted those national accounts. And it's the chicken can't come before the egg kind of a thing. Have to have the distribution channel. But once you do that, I mean, that's like life-changing for everyone involved in this brand.
I'm so excited, first of all, for where we're headed, right? But it's been done, as you said, Cliff. The infrastructure has been poured, so it's responsible growth. We're doing it right, Justin, as you said. We will go international. We'll go to Europe. We'll go to Canada. We'll go to Mexico. We're already looking at it. We will fill the map with the right people, But you gave me too much credit, Cliff. I'm not doing it. My team's doing it. Truly, if I didn't have some of the people on the free and dev department doing what they do best, there's no way. I tried it. I'm not very good at it. I'm not very organized. People are going with the top brand, top people over there, and then the top coaches and the top professionals in the league, right? That's why I love the IFA. That's why I love the franchise community, because there's some amazing talent. It's the major league of business owning, as far as I'm concerned. You've seen it. You go to these things. And we're so fortunate to be able to find the best talent out there. And we bring them here when we can.
Well said.
Absolutely. I agree. I wish you great success in your business. Tell your dad we said hello. Very impressive what you're building, Adam. I appreciate you taking time away from your business to spend an hour with us.
Very kind.
Awesome. Thanks, Adam.